Welcome to The Filibuster, the podcast of the Union University Political Science Department. The filibuster refers to the right to unlimited debate in the world's greatest deliberative body, the U.S. Senate, but we have been known to run long in these podcasts, which reminds me that the word also comes from an old Spanish term for freebooter, that is, a pirate or a mercenary. So hopefully today we can lean more into the august term for unlimited debate and free speech, and less into the swashbuckling world of piracy and keep ourselves to one or two episodes. But I'm happy to be here. I'm Seth Brake. I'm the visiting professor of political science, and today I'm joined by Sean Evans, the chair of the political science department and professor of political science. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. I guess I can't make pirate talk then, arg, or anything like that.
Well, you can. We just got to keep it limited.
Okay. All
right. Yeah. Well, today we're still sifting through the rubble from the New Hampshire primary. Not long before that, we had the Iowa caucus. And both of them were not won by new faces. Looks like Donald Trump reigns supreme in the GOP. And the field is narrowed to technically two, but realistically, it feels more like one. So my first question today is the GOP primary over?
For all practical purposes, it is over. It looks like Nikki Haley is going to stick around for a while. Looks like she's talking now at least through Super Tuesday. Right now, only two states have voted, so the process technically goes on through the summer. Once someone has a majority of the delegates, at that time they're the presumptive nominee. But at this point, based upon what we have seen, Haley's doing best among independents. Trump's doing well among Republicans. I would bet on the person who gets the vote of Republicans over independents to win the Republican nomination.
Well, that seems reasonable. What does this mean for the Republican Party then? Where is that party?
That's a great question. I'm not quite sure I know that. I know people saying it's Trump's party, but I think it means it's going to depend upon what you mean by that. I think if you look at the kinds of policies that the party is promoting, whether at the state or the national level, they tend to be traditional Republican ideas of free market approaches, tax cuts, and that kind of thing. Even things like the border wall fits into the conservative realm. Where you see the divides over would be on things like trade policy, foreign policy, and that kind of things. And it is a divide. It's not that one side has won out. So I think it's still a conservative party. The question is how much populism is going to take over. And that's going to depend upon if Trump can win and if Trump can be successful.
How divided can it really be when Donald Trump is winning like he is, though?
Well, it depends upon who we're looking at. What I say is there's actually a good deal of division at both at the elite and at the mass level. At the elite level, there are quite a few Republicans who are what I would call Reagan Republicans who are holding their nose and supporting Trump. Right. They're doing it out of convenience. And I'm not quite sure how much of the populist policy has that much of a hold. Conservatives have been running as populists for decades. Trump's just doing it in a new way. I'm not quite sure I see a lot of Republicans adopting some of his populist ideas on trade, foreign policy, and stuff like that. If we look at the mass level, the big difference is that the masses are divided between a populist wing, what I'd say would be a more economically centrist, maybe even economically left-leaning, and a more libertarian economic view. But there's also a slight divide between social and cultural conservatives, in that social conservatives are more driven by moral issues. Abortion is more important to them. There's a lot of the working class people who are more cultural conservatives, and they like the cultural issues more, whether it deals with immigration, gender identity and those kinds, right. or wokeism in general. Mm-hmm. There's kind of a difference there. And you even see where Trump is kind of moderating on abortion on some level. And so you do see that divide. So what I'd say is the Republican Party is really a divided party, which is why, if you notice, there's not really a policy agenda.
Right.
That the Republicans have in Congress. And let's be honest, Trump doesn't really have a policy agenda. And part of that is because, A, well, Trump doesn't think that much about policy. And two, there isn't a consensus on a lot of issues in the Republican Party.
Is it fair to say that there's more consensus on Trump than there is on any of those policies that he may or may not support?
I'm not sure I'd even go that far, because there's not a consensus on Trump. There is a politics of expediency on Trump.
Right. Well, we're mostly going to talk about the Republicans today because they're the ones who are doing most of the interesting things. However, it's one thing that seems to not be happening, which is sort of interesting, is the Democratic primary. Well, what's going on there?
Yeah, that's got to be very interesting in the sense to where if you look at polls, 2/3 of Americans don't want Joe Biden to run for president, just like 60% of Americans don't want Trump to be president. But there's also close to half the party would like to see someone other than Biden as the nominee. A lot of this is because of his age. Mm-hmm. And let's be honest, he has not aged well in the presidency. He's slowing down, and he was slow in the first place. And I think part of it is, I think that is a lot. There's also some policy churning that he's probably more moderate, while the base is more progressive, or at least the elite base is more progressive, even though he has pursued a lot of the progressive agenda. So, yeah, I mean, it's not really a race, and part of this is because, A, no one serious has challenged him. I'm sorry, but RFK Jr., Dean Phillips, and Marianne Williamson are not serious challenges to him.
Isn't that a little mysterious, then, if we have a president who's not very popular, even in his own party? And it's time for the primary, and he's unopposed by any serious candidates. Well, how do we resolve that?
Yeah, I think that is surprising. I think there are a couple of things working with this. One is the Trump thing. Mm. Biden is the Trump slayer, and that means a lot to the Democratic Party. When you combine that with there's a belief that a challenge to a sitting incumbent, a serious challenge to a sitting incumbent, leads that party to lose. And if you believe Trump is an existential threat to the country, you don't want that to occur. The second aspect to this is if you run and lose, and the party loses in November, you get the blame and you have no future. Third, if you're going after the king, you better take him down. And the question is, are you going to get the support from donors and activists and others to do that? The fact that he does not have a serious challenge indicates that people have been concerned about that. I mean, we've seen where California Governor Gavin Newsom has been running a shadow campaign, showing up, debating DeSantis, trolling DeSantis and Trump, and showing up at all of these events. He's kind of trying to signal the party, I'm here if you need me. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a concern from some people is, okay, will Biden potentially decide before the convention not to run, in which case the choice is who replaces him? And the idea is most people don't have confidence in Vice President Harris, so the idea is Newsom saying, I'm available if needed.
The understudy.
Yes.
Seems unlikely at this point that Biden would decide not to run, surely, right?
Right. There's something that every president wants, and that's a second term. And so it doesn't matter what condition they're in. They're going to try to run for that. And remember, there are a lot of people around the president whose jobs might depend on him staying in power, and they're going to encourage him to do that also. And then let's not forget, if you're running for president, you have a very healthy ego or sure. unhealthy ego, depending upon how you want to look at it. You have to have an ego enough to think that you can run the country and be a major player in the world, but without thinking that the world can't get by without you. So there's kind of a fine line there, and many politicians at that level have problems distinguishing between the two. I would say we have that problem on the Republican side mm-hmm. also.
So if both parties have what, you know, is sometimes derisively termed a coronation instead of a primary, is that bad for our system? Is that a bad sign that this is happening?
Yes. I mean, I think it's a bad sign for the Republican Party because they're not debating what they should be debating, which is what is the future of the Republican Party. Mm-hmm. I mean, one good thing about potentially Haley going on is that she can bring up ideas and potentially do that. But if it's a coronation, will people be listening to her? Right. I think it's also bad in the sense that we have two potential octogenarians as president, and part of the question is, are they going to be at their best mentally and physically to serve for 4 years? Mm-hmm. And I think on some level, having a longer campaign, it would be good for both of them to see if they actually have what it takes right. so that they could potentially drop out if necessary. And so I think it's not good, and it's also not good for us because everyone's ready to turn the page.
Right.
We're ready to move beyond the boomer generation. We want a new generation of leadership, but yet we're not going to get it.
So the Democrats in their primary seem to be taking the opportunity to explore some changes.
Yes. Well, okay, so they're doing some good things that I think are good in that they're saying there's no reason that Iowa and New Hampshire should be first. Mm. And so they're looking at a new system. And so I think that's good. I think we need to move away from Iowa and New Hampshire. Why are they better than any of the other 48 states right. With that? I'm sure they give it a lot of due diligence to make the best decisions possible, but I think people in all the other states would do the same thing if they had that opportunity. So the fact that Biden is changing this is good, but also we have to remember he's changing it to states that he did very well in,
right.
So he changed it in a way to where it makes it even more difficult for someone to challenge him and to beat him. So while it is good extrinsically, he's shaking up the presidential primary system. It's also good intrinsically for him in the way that he has redesigned it.
Sure. No, that makes sense. Well, let's go back to talking about the Republicans then.
Okay.
It does look like Donald Trump is winning or has won. Do you think he ran a good campaign?
Yes and no. I think he has run a good campaign in the sense to where he in this way. First, he realized that he could dominate the media coverage and squeeze out all other voices. So the thing for all his competitors is that they were unknown. He is known. He has so dominated the media that people don't hear about them. And if you don't hear about the alternatives, you go with who you know. I'd also say he's been rather smart in the sense to where he has tried, I don't want to say rigged the process, but that's a little bit about what he has done. He has worked with his allies in various state parties to create more winner-take-all states so that if he gets the most votes, which was most likely, he would win all of the delegates. What he has also done is he's taken a more active role in choosing who the delegates for him will be. This is important because he is concerned about, is he convicted before a convention? Would the convention be willing to dump him? But by choosing people that he knows that is loyal to him, he almost guarantees that the convention will not dump him no matter what. So on the strategic level, he has been successful. Well, I think he's also been successful in trying to define his opponents with the nicknames and everything else
right.
because he has the focus and they don't. Of course, we still have the problem of Trump saying inappropriate things and things that will backfire on him if not now then later.
Oh no, that makes a lot of sense. Well, let's talk a little bit about the characters then. Let's talk about what happened.
All right.
So last weekend, Ron DeSantis drops out before the New Hampshire primary even starts. Were you surprised by that? Is this something that we saw coming?
Yes. It's kind of version of Stein's Law. A candidate thinks he can win until he can't.
Right.
I mean, and I'm not saying that candidates are delusional, but the idea is that they are very optimistic about their chances. And they come up with plans and strategies to where if you look at it on paper, it gives them a roadmap to win. And so when we are looking at campaigns, we're looking at whether we have a good candidate who has the right message, who has the money to communicate the message and the organization to get out the vote. What we found is that DeSantis's strategy was to be Trump without the baggage, but what we found out was he is also Trump without the charm in that he wasn't the best candidate to deliver that idea. Plus the thing in looking at this is to be Trump without the baggage is he thought the only way I can win is if I get a substantial portion of Trump supporters. And I think he was correct on that. But what he did to gain the Trump supporters made it more difficult to get many of the people who wanted to move on from Trump. And so he ended up being Trump light. And if you have the choice between Trump and Trump Lite, you go with the real thing. And that was part of his problem. What we also found out was that he created a super PAC to run his campaign. He was going to have people knocking on doors in Iowa this summer, thinking that if he could deliver a blow in Iowa, he could ride on from there. But what we find out was that his campaign could not raise the money that they could, and they wasted the money that they had. And so he put all his marbles in Iowa. He came in a distant second. He ran out of money, and that's why he couldn't continue past New Hampshire.
So the strategy that he had put in place just didn't pan out.
Right.
There's no need to keep running it after then.
Right. I mean, and part of it is the right message at the right time. I mean, part of his idea was Trump can't win. But when we see polls where Trump is running even or slightly ahead of Biden, that argument kind of has a problem. And once again, it goes to the right message at the right time. What we have seen with Trump is he has capitalized on these indictments. DeSantis has said that he thought the New York indictment over the hush money payments to the porn star was what hurt him. And I think he's right in part. If you look at polling before that time, DeSantis was close. He started to decline a little, but once that first indictment came in, his numbers started to crater even more. Part of this was he made some strategic mistakes in the campaign.
Right.
But part of it was when he was indicted, everyone said all the Republicans said it was wrong, which gave Republicans a reason to rally around him.
Right.
Same happened with the classified documents indictment and the January 6th indictments. Trump was weak when he left office, but no one was willing to try to kill the king. And
and
I think part of the problem is first of all, most people had made up their minds about Trump. But the question is, could people change people's mind? But if you don't tell people why they shouldn't support Trump, they're going to continue to support Trump. And so they had opportunities after January 6th with some of the indictments to say, here's what's wrong. But they ended up supporting him, in which case they communicated to everyone, there's no reason not to support Trump.
No, that makes sense. But that then asks, that demands the answer to a much harder question, I think. If DeSantis saw the writing on the wall, saw the results of Iowa and, you know, not New Hampshire, but leading up to New Hampshire, and knew that he had to drop out. Why is Nikki Haley still in the race?
Well, that's a very good question in that regard. I think that I think she realizes in her heart that she can't win. Now, whether she has admitted that intellectually or not, I don't know. I think what she is thinking is, I'm the last person standing, that there's a significant anti-Trump vote, or I'm concerned about that. If I can get them to rally around me, I can win. I think there's also an aspect of, if he gets convicted, am I the next one up? Because I'm the one who has the second most votes. And I'm guessing that's what she's thinking, because her chance of actually defeating Trump one-on-one is not great, because as we mentioned earlier, she gets most of her support from independents and less support from Republicans.
So those are the two candidates that, you know, I've certainly thought the most about. But one of the interesting things about the Republican field is just how crowded it was in the early stages.
Yeah.
And now, to me, when I look at that, I see some of these candidates, you know, people I've barely heard about, right? Some of them. And, you know, I got to ask myself, why do candidates like that even run? What's in it for them?
Well, they run because they think they can win. Now, once again, this goes back to the idea that a candidate thinks he can win until he can't. And so the idea is, if you look at all of them, on paper, they did have a strategy that could potentially help them win. I mean, Asia Hutchinson ran as the Republican, as the Reagan Republican. Doug Burgum ran as the, hey, I know how to build a strong economy. You had Tim Scott as the optimistic Republican. You had Vivek Ramaswamy as a as another Trump without the baggage. He was the minority version of Trump. And so I think they all said, you know, if people really are tired of Trump, there is a pathway for me to win. And what we found out was they did not really have the pathway. There are some people like Chris Christie, that he was running to take down Trump. And so when Trump has high approval within the party, that makes his case very difficult. There are sometimes that people try to run to promote an idea. I don't really see many candidates running to promote an idea. They were running to win, in that regard. Or you've got some, like, I'd say like Vivek Ramaswamy was not running to win. He was running to be VP, or running to be in the cabinet, because he ran more as Trump's wingman, trying to carry the load and attacking the people who criticize Trump. But if you're running on Trump is great, why should you vote for him?
No, that makes sense. Do you think any of the candidates did change the conversation in the GOP by running?
No.
No. It's the same story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I mean, and part of this is because Trump dominated the field and the coverage from the very beginning. And the strongest candidates, DeSantis ran as a mini Trump. And Haley didn't have enough of an emphasis, enough of a message in money to communicate something else. And she's not really all that different from Trump on many different ways.
No, that makes a lot of sense. You know, we had this whole process where we had debates, we had these conversations, things like this, processes that Trump did not participate in, right? Why do you think Trump didn't show up to the debates? And was that the right call?
Oh, absolutely. It was the right call, because if he showed up on the debates, more people would watch and people could see there's someone who they might like better than him. So every time there was a debate, he did something on another channel so people would not watch it. Or after the first debate, which was going to have the most viewers, he made sure he turned himself in after the Georgia indictment 2 days later. So the media coverage would shift from the debate to him. And so basically, anytime someone could try to get a foothold, he did something to make sure it would not last.
No, that makes sense.
Now, having said that, I do think the debates were important in that it helped winnow the field. And so that was important. Remember, we had a whole bunch of people running, but what we found out was that someone like Nikki Haley made the most of the debate experience. If you saw what the polls showed before and after, people had much higher opinions of her, which made people more open to her. And that basically helped her consolidate the anybody but Trump vote based on her performance in those things. Because, and most people would say, at least in the first two, she was the clear winner to a lot of people. And so that helped her raise money, and that helped people consider her. DeSantis did okay, but not many people changed their minds about him one way or the other. And really, not many people changed their minds about Trump who watched that. You saw that Vivek Ramaswamy got a lot of attention after the first debate, but what we found out was his negatives went through the roof every time he went in a debate. And so he got more coverage, but more negative coverage, which I think hurt him.
Well, moving on from the primaries, then I suppose we have to look forward. So now that we know who it's probably going to be in both parties, and there were no big surprises, what do we expect are going to be the biggest issues in the presidential campaign?
I think it's the ones we've already seen. It's the economy. It's abortion. It is immigration. Those are the things that top most people's concerns, and I don't see anything really rising up to change that. That doesn't mean a new issue will not arise, but I think it is that there would have to be some kind of issue. I mean, there's Ukraine, there's Israel, but that's not really capturing the public's attention like immigration, abortion, and the economy are.
Is there a chance that, because, you know, Trump still has the court cases hanging over him, is there a chance that he gets seriously delayed by anything like that during the election process?
I think we have to realize that the indictments are not good for Trump on many different levels. Because of what we have seen, what has he spent a lot of the primary, season doing? Sitting in court. He's going to be sitting in court a lot between now and November. This means time in court is not time on the campaign trail and is not time raising money. What we also have to realize is money he's that he is raising for the campaign, he is spending on attorneys, not on his message, his ads, his organization, and everything else. And the more time he spends in court, it's great for Republicans because they'll rally around him. But he's not worried about getting the Republican vote to win. He needs to get independents to win. And the more he spends time in court, the more they're going to be reminded about, A, he's chaos, he's trouble. Do we really want more of this? And if he is convicted, then that's going to change a lot of things too, because polling is showing that a significant number of independents and a not insignificant number of Republicans would be less likely to vote for him in that instance. So Trump is really a high-risk choice for the Republican Party to make, when really there were people who had less baggage, would have many of the same policies, who, if they were nominated, I would say would probably win easily. Trump is at best 50-50, and even that I'm not too sure about. Even if you look at polling right now, he really doesn't get much above 46%, which is the percent of the vote he got in 2016 and 2020. So he's not gaining new votes. The question is, will Biden be able to get the people who voted for him in 2020 vote for him again, and will they turn out in the numbers he needs to win?
So it sort of looks like, if all things remain the same, we're headed for a very similar election to the one that we had last time, because some of the same issues are on the ballot, a lot of the same, it's the same two candidates, and they have the same strengths and weaknesses.
Yes. Well, I would say Biden has more weaknesses than he did in 2020, because when you're not president, people can see you as who they want to see you. They see him for who he is now, and he has a four-year record to defend, and that's why his polling is in the 30s, which isn't great.
All right. Well, that's it'll be interesting to see how that shapes out then, and we'll see what things could pop up to make it different, or maybe we'll just watch the same process again.
Yeah. I don't really have a good response to this yet.
Yeah.
It feels like the old Batman show, we're coming up with the same,
same bat time, same bat channel?
Yes, same bat time, same bat channel. Thanks for remembering that. Though I'm kind of impressed you even
I've watched the Batman show.
That you've seen the old Batman show.
I know the classics.
Some good 1960s TV. Not that I was alive to see it live.
Well, then we both have the same retrospective.
Yeah, we both with that. Yeah. Okay.
Well, let's hope that it's not the same bat time, same bat channel with the presidential campaigns forever, but maybe it is.
Well, I think due to age, it will not be the same options in 2028.
Well, we'll see. Things could change there, too. No, thank you so much for your thoughts on this, and I've enjoyed our conversation. Do you have any parting comments for us?
My response is we can do better, and we deserve better. It's unfortunate that we're not.
All right. Well, with that, I'm going to yield back the remainder of my time as a more like a senator than a pirate. Have a good day.
All right. Arrgh.